Welcome back, everybody, to the Megatherium Club podcast. I'm Sean, and I'm here with my buddies Zach and Spencer to talk about some fascinating creatures throughout time. How have you guys been today? Up to anything cool?
I had the day off because I got my COVID and flu shot yesterday, and I did not feel super great. So,
Hell yeah.
I'm proud of you. Off,
playing a little hooky. Can't complain.
I'm proud of you for getting your vaccines.
That's right. I will still get them regardless of what other people say about it.
So. I don't know. I heard that vaccines are going to crush your small business. And you're going to get deported to Greenland is what I heard.
That sounds like a good thing.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Greenland sounds pretty wonderful.
I mean, I would rather it would be Iceland, but like, I'll take what I can get.
I mean, I'm in a... Yeah, I agree with that.
Beggars can't be choosers, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I hope you guys have all survived the election and have... are dealing with any post-election depression. We'll get through this.
We'll play a lot of Magic in the meantime.
As long as you're vaccinated, you'll get through this.
Yeah, potentially.
Well, anything new coming up for you guys? Getting ready for the holidays?
Yeah, I'm ready for Christmas music. I know that some people hate it, but I'm all about it, so.
The only time Christmas music is acceptable is December 24th and 25th.
Okay, you're wrong, but okay. November 1st is adequate. Just kidding. Maybe not. I don't know. I can't tell.
You gotta wait at least until after Thanksgiving for it to be acceptable. It's still annoying, though.
Some of my neighbors have their Christmas trees up already, and it's like...
Why? They're gonna lose their needles by Christmas.
It's magical.
Okay, if you guys haven't heard of it, I highly recommend listening to the Looney Tunes Christmas playlist. I don't know. I was gonna say CD because that's what I grew up on, but I don't think you guys are gonna go out and buy the CD. So listen to a Looney Tunes Christmas.
I don't even know what that is.
I can't even think of a funny thing to call that right now.
Is that like a vinyl?
Yes.
Yeah, but
yes, it's older. I think
you put it on your finger and vinyl. Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Our generation went through cassettes, CDs, DVDs, Blu-rays, and now the next generation doesn't know any of them.
Whatever happened to Blu-ray? That was supposed to be like the next new thing, and it just disappeared.
Digital, man. Everything's digital.
Yeah, I guess Netflix happened.
Yeah. Well,
remember when you could get a Blu-ray or a DVD from Netflix?
I do, yeah. We used to get the DVDs from Blockbuster sent through the mail. Those are the good old days.
I liked Redbox. Trying to find the nearest Redbox near you, and then you
drove. There was a Redbox outside of a grocery store, and I was like, dang, they still have those? Now, there's a sign on it that says, this Redbox is not being utilized. Do not take Redbox here. They're out of business, and I guess they just abandoned all of the Redboxes. So
cool.
And now people are collecting them. They'll go to stores and pick them up and just take them into their home. So Sean, if you want one, you just have to go to a store that has one, ask if you can move it for free, and they'll probably let you.
Wait, really?
Yeah, either that or they have to pay a professional to come out and move it for them. So if you say I'm gonna move it for free, they probably would let you.
Interesting.
And you'll have a Redbox machine for some reason.
That's what I've always wanted.
So. Do you think they still have movies in them?
Yeah, probably.
That's probably where all those movies, after they're done with them, they go in that $1 bin at Walmart.
Yep.
Well, cool. I'm glad we are recording today, and I'll be, you know, flying to Florida tomorrow, seeing family, and then I'll be out half of December. So happy early holidays to you guys, because I don't know if we'll be recording again before then. But hopefully when I get back in December, we'll record more.
Yeah.
I'm probably never going to talk to you until Christmas.
Good. I didn't want to talk to you. I'm just...
Yeah.
I need my space.
So this episode.
So here we go.
So this episode. And the next one, we are going to focus on the Triassic period. And we looked at the statistics of our episodes, and one of our most popular ones so far is the one we discussed, the Pleistocene. And so we wanted to visit another time period, since you guys enjoyed that so much. And what better than the beginning of the dinosaurs? Oops. Was that a spoiler alert? Oh my god,
you just spoiled it!
Oh, shh! You guys didn't hear that. Sorry.
I'm gonna bleep out that whole
just section. Cut that out. Don't even bleep it, just cut it out.
Well, let's dive in, shall we? To understand the Triassic, we must first look at the worst extinction event of all time, marking the end of the Permian and beginning of the Triassic. This is also the boundary between the Paleozoic period and the Mesozoic period. And if you aren't sure what the Mesozoic is, it's what includes the Triassic, Jurassic, and Cretaceous. Like, it's the time of the dinosaurs. Bleep that out. About 251.9 million years ago, give or take a day or several, this extinction event took place over the course of approximately 100,000 years. This event was also known as the Great Dying, and for a pretty good reason. I think if you ask anybody about what extinction event comes first to their mind, they would probably mention the one 66 million years ago, marking the end of the non-avian dinosaurs. And yes, I did say 66. Stop thinking it's 65, everybody. Science has updated. But this one is much worse, if you can even imagine so. Depending on where you get your information, stats you will see include 9 out of 10 marine species died, while 7 out of 10 on land. Some places will claim as high as 96% of marine life died off. Supposedly, 57% of families, as in biological families, King Philip came over for good spaghetti. The four in that phrase is what? The families. What? You've never heard of that?
What did you just say?
King Philip came over for good spaghetti. It's how you remember the kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species.
You've never heard that one before. I don't think anybody ever gave me a mnemonic for that. They were just like, memorize this.
Memorize it. And you didn't come up with King Philip came over for good spaghetti yourself?
That's come on, Zach.
Hindsight's 2020. It was right there.
So the four in that mnemonic phrase, that's the right word, right? It's a mnemonic phrase?
Yes.
Oh, okay, yeah. Cool. I didn't know what it's called. I just always say it.
Ironically, you need a mnemonic for mnemonic, but whatever.
But 57% of those families died off, and 83% of genera, or the plural of genus. Why isn't the plural of genus genuses? Is the plural of penis Panera?
Like Panera bread?
Yes.
Yep. Oh my god, penis is bread.
I mean, baguettes are vaguely phallic if you have a really good imagination.
Vaguely?
I
think it's pretty phallic. I don't know how it's not. What? I guess maybe if you're like a snake and have like hemipenes.
Oh my god, okay. All right,
onward. A lot of things died and no class was left out. Trees, plants, lizards, proto-mammals, insects, fish, mollusks, microbes, they're all nearly wiped out. And I tried to compare these stats to the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs, or the non-avian dinosaurs, and saw numbers suggesting approximately 75% of life was wiped out then. So, still pretty bad, obviously, but this great dying saw some numbers higher than that. He was number one.
Always appreciate, a good SpongeBob reference, yep.
So what caused this? Was it also an asteroid? Well, for the longest time, the biggest theory out there involved heavy volcanic activity, and the extinction was thought to take place over the course of millions of years. Siberia had this intense volcanic activity that increased CO2 levels, sulfur poisoned the atmosphere alongside it, ocean acidification occurred, which would be a big reason why we see so much dead ocean life. Acid rain was never ending, etc., etc. It was hell, I guess. Literally hell. A long, slow dying rather than a quick one caused by something like an impact. With new research comes new theories, and now scientists think that they have this great dying taking place over 80 to 100,000 years. And I saw somewhere someone even said it was 60,000 plus or minus 42,000 years. So
it's a pretty big margin of error.
Anywhere from 20,000 to 105,000 years. I don't know. Let's just say 100,000 years rather than the millions of years that was originally thought. This is a blip in the chronological scale of life on Earth. This is no longer a slow dying event. 100,000 years might seem like a long time to us. It's almost like Thanos just snapped and said goodbye.
Yep.
But worse, if Thanos on a greater scale. And there seems to be a lot of discussion over whether this extinction was dragged out or was a fast one. One of the theories that could explain a quicker process of killing off millions of life forms is that an asteroid impact had something to do with, like, either triggering an extinction or triggering the volcanic activity. There are multiple sites around the world with exposed rock from this time period, and they have specific molecules trapped inside called fullerenes, also known as buckyballs. It just makes me think of Marvel. But these molecules have traces of helium and argon gas with isotopes more common in space than on Earth, which, and the importance of this is that these buckyballs have been found in other rock layers, ones that are associated with other known impacts, such as the 1.8 billion year old crater in Ontario with the Sudbury impact, which I wasn't, you know, very familiar with, but that was billions of years ago. And then the more famous one about 66 million years ago also had these buckyballs in the stone layer representing that extinction. So
Bucky gets around, you know.
The gas station?
Yeah,
they do. We're about to get one down the road.
Dude, yeah, they put one in south of Loveland.
Ooh, that's not even... What? It's supposed to be like a southern U.S. thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's
crazy.
The only one I know of in Colorado, but like,
it's yeah, there. Everybody's talking about it. Yeah. My parents are talking about
it. Let's be honest, though. They have the nicest bathroom. I would rather sleep in their bathroom floor than most hotel rooms. No? Okay, maybe not.
I've never been in their bathroom.
Their bathroom was fine. I walked in there. I've been there twice now, and after the first time I was there, I was like, I never need to come here again. It is everything that you could possibly hate about America and capitalism, all wrapped into one big gas station.
I will say they had like rings for sale or something for men. Maybe, I don't know, like rubber
what
rings.
What kind of ring?
And I sized myself on my finger prior to getting married. So I actually only know what my ring size is because they had something at a Buc-ee's gas station for me to try on. So thank you, Buc-ee's, for letting me have the proper size wedding ring.
Making our special days magical.
But back to this great dying. What do we know about this extinction event? One thing is that the atmosphere CO2 levels increased to 2,500 parts per million during this time. For a comparison, 280 was the normal prior to the Industrial Revolution. Not 280,000, 280, and it rose up to 2,500. Nowadays, the normal, because of humans, is at 422 parts per million. So, you know, we're not near the Triassic levels, but we're quite a bit higher than prior Industrial Revolution. Global temperatures appear to have rose 14 degrees Fahrenheit, or 8 Celsius, between the Permian and the Triassic. And you can see in the rock layers, as you like go up, you know, more recent rock layers at the top, and go from Permian to Triassic, you see like a plethora of life, and then all of a sudden, nothing. There's just nothing in the rock layers. Is just because everything died. And what came after the Great Dying? Let's talk about the early Triassic. The Triassic period is broken into the early, mid, and late. And I'll talk a little bit about the early before I pass the baton to Zach. But this time period spans about 4.7 million years. The early Triassic is further broken into the Induan Age and the Old Christmas... Oh God, I can't say it. Old Nicky in age.
At least there's consistency.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm not getting better on these pronunciations. But the Induin, being the first 0.7 million years after the Great Dying, during this time, the land masses on Earth were pushed together into the supercontinent we all know as Pangaea. Which, whoop, whoop. Do you fuck with Pangaea? you know what I'm referencing.
Shout out Lil Dicky.
Yeah.
I hope he hears this podcast.
And Lil Dicky, if you hear this podcast,
you can come record your next music video at my house.
we can talk about Pangaea. Or you can bring Brain with you as well.
Dude, we'll fuck with Pangaea for sure.
Wait, I don't...
You don't know that reference. Oh,
I know who Lil Dicky is, but I don't know the reference.
Look up Pillow Talk by him.
Okay.
It's great. Brain...
See, I was thinking that Pangaea would be the perfect band name.
Oh, that would be.
If you guys wanted to start a band. Because then we could break up, you know, eventually.
Come back together. And
then come back together and be Pangaea Ultima. Which, by the way, for those of you who don't know, is the next predicted supercontinent.
This time period was hot. The oceans were hot. The land was arid, rainless deserts devoid of most life. The poles were rather temperate, though, actually, and did support a decent amount of where, you know, the life that was supported on Earth was probably at the poles, especially early on in the Triassic. To be successful during this period of recovery, animals needed to have high metabolisms. Some of the most successful of these were the Lystrosauruses, which are arguably described as disaster taxon, or animals that are the first to populate an area after something like the Great Dying takes place. And if you don't know what a Lystrosaur is, look it up. They are fantastic little reptile dog lizards that are, I don't know, they got some nice canines, but they look so silly. If you've played Ark, they do backflips for you.
And they give you an XP boost.
They do. They give you an experience boost. They're so cute. They're little, they're like cat-sized lizards that, I guess, had high metabolisms and were the first on the scene after disasters and could quickly populate an area. And hardy. They could survive through a lot. I think they also probably survived because they burrowed into the ground. So they weren't really exposed to a lot of the worst things going on above ground, like acid rain. The Lystrosaurs were widespread across the landmass, and I had read that they had quite the diversity in Antarctica. Alongside it came non-mammalian, but early mammalian relatives, the cynodonts, early archosauriforms, which I do go on later to discuss, but they are ancestor of organisms like birds and crocodiles, and dinosauromorphs. Oh, and dinosauromorphs also show up in the second part of the early Triassic. That word that I will not try to pronounce again. Gymnosperms were the dominant flora during this early Triassic period. And gymnosperms, again, just a reminder, are the naked seed type plants, so think conifers. Flowering plants were not around yet. Other plants that could be found were the pteridophytes, a type of vascular plant that produces neither seed nor flower, and they produce via spores. These include horsetails and ferns, and the lycopoda, which are also vascular plants reproducing through the spore method, includes things such as club mosses and quillworts. About the marine life, what made it through after 97% of it died from acidification and rising temps? Scientists argue over how long it took for life to recover underwater. Some say it took almost 10 million years going into the middle Triassic, while some areas might have bounced back after only 1 million years or so. A lot of popular organisms were no longer around, such as the Eurypterids, which are giant sea scorpions, trilobites, love them, blastoids, not blastoise.
Wait, like, yeah. Not the Pokemon.
Not the, you know... What number was he? Six? Or was he nine?
Six.
I don't know. Six. These were blastoids with a D, are a type of echinoderm that looks...
Now I'm just imagining blastoids with a D.
I hope you do. Blastoids with a D are...
Explicit rating.
are a type of echinoderm that looked like if a sea star was a flower bud at the end of, a flower. And some cool-jawed fishes known as acanthodians are no longer around, and almost all of the ammonites died out, and plus a lot more. If you needed calcium to make your skeleton or shell, you were shit out of luck and were hit the hardest. Crinoids did make it through the Permian-Triassic boundary, just barely, though. They're pretty cool fossils nowadays. And bivalves also became more popular in the early Triassic compared to the Permian. This extinction event changed life under the water forever. I'm sure you can say that about on land too, for one reason or another. But underwater, in the Permian, life was mostly sessile in the oceans. They, you know, by sessile, I mean they attached themselves to the bottom and filter fed. While there were things moving around, the majority was sessile. And after the Great Dying, and of course as life began to bounce back, complex life became more abundant, outnumbering the simple organisms. Free living or non-sessile became more popular, leading to a whole new type of community with food webs and a predator-prey interaction becoming more popular. A whole new world was developing after this early Triassic, with new types of organisms popping up and taking advantage of this barren wasteland. And one more thing that I found interesting before I turn it over is that there is no coal deposits from this time. Coal is formed from plant matter that decayed and was buried under heat pressure for millions of years. Well, no plants to create the coal, no coal was formed. So that's how bad this extinction event was, is there's nothing up there to die. To, you know, become coal.
Was there like a huge, I guess, influx of coal at the end of the Permian? Because everything died.
I don't know. I don't know if the end of the Permian, though, would be the early Triassic.
Right, but also coal forms when you have... Coal forms, like, a lot of fossils. So if the conditions aren't right to create fossils, then coal probably wouldn't form that well. I mean, I know it's a little different. Because most coal formed before decomposition was really much of a thing.
No, it occurs when decomposition cannot happen, like in anoxic environments like peat bogs and stuff. Decomposition was definitely a thing then. Like, there's no way it wasn't.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying, is like at the end of the Permian, did things just decompose? Like, and that's...
Well, I read some stuff and I didn't include it here, but now I kind of wish I would have read into that more to answer this question. But I saw where they were talking about like influxes of fungi. So maybe there was like a boom in fungi breaking down things that would then not allow it to reach coal.
Possibly.
So that maybe that's what they were talking about. I just kind of skimmed over it, or I would be talking forever. But
right.
So yeah, that's the early Triassic. It's a pretty crazy world going on. Well, what happens in the middle Triassic?
Not much. The middle Triassic, from what I could tell, there was nothing super significant. The whole like theme of the Triassic was after the Permian, you know, Great Dying, like you said, the first 10 million years is just recovery. Life is coming back. And basically what I found about the middle Triassic is that, well, it was mostly about the geology. So there was some German paleontologist named Friedrich August von Alberti, and he, I don't know if he discovered these, but he references these three rock layers that sort of denote beginning, middle, and end of the Triassic, and they're named, this is in German, so forgive me, I don't speak German, but the early Triassic is called Buntsandstein, the middle called Muschelkalk, and the late is the Cooper formation. The Cooper.
I don't think that last one's German enough.
It's K-E-U-P-E-R. It's German spelling, but I'm calling it Cooper. The middle is marked by the Muschelkalk. It occurred over about a 10 million year period from 247 to 237 million years ago. And we talked about Pangea, the big old supercontinent, where basically all land on Earth was all together in one giant continent that went from the North Pole down to the South Pole, but it was pretty thin, relatively speaking. And it covered a quarter of the planet's surface. So it's just like, I don't know, giant, long, and thin, I guess. But one thing that kind of does mark the Middle Triassic is what's called the Tethys Sea. So this was like it started as a strait, and then it cut its way all the way east to west across Pangea, splitting it into two. And on the north, we have the sub-supercontinent called Laurasia. And then south of that, we have Gondwana, which is probably more likely the one that anybody's heard of after Pangea. So it kind of splits it into two. And up until this point, there's not really a whole lot of like climatic variation, at least on land. Pretty much everything was hot and dry, with some exceptions around the equator and on the coastal regions where things were maybe more monsoonal. And the Middle Triassic, because everything is coming back and it's regenerating, it's recovering from the Permian extinction, forests start to grow again in these monsoonal, coastal, equatorial areas. But everywhere else was kind of just like described as like a fern, not desert, like a plain, like fern savanna. I can't remember the exact word that they used, but it was just kind of like covered in ferns, and it was dry, which made it really hard for ferns to exist because their spores need water to like spread around. And they actually found like a really big drop in fern diversity around this time. But at least plant wise the Triassic in general, but specifically Middle Triassic, when everything is recovering, it was dominated by the gymnosperms. So ferns kind of started as some of the earliest land plants, and then gymnosperms came after that. So that's things like your pine trees, well, coniferous trees. Pine trees weren't around at that time yet, but coniferous trees, they had cycads, and they had ginkgos, which are still around. Same with cycads. Actually, I have a cycad sitting right next to me while we talk. A little sago palm that needs to be repotted.
Man, ginkgos are really old.
Dude, ginkgos are so old. They came around in the early Triassic. And they used to be a lot more diverse, apparently. And now I think we only have one species of ginkgo. But
yeah.
Yeah, ginkgos are so old, and that's like what makes them really cool, I think. That, and they're like the only broadleaf gymnosperm that I think exists currently that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Yes.
Does that check out to everybody else?
Yeah.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, I don't know. When you look at a tree that's got leaves on it, right? Like you don't think gymnosperm. You don't think a naked seed. Right. You think of angiosperms, flowering plants. But that's one of the things about the whole Triassic, really, is that a lot of the plants and the ecosystems that we think of today, like broadleaf forests and grasslands, they didn't even exist because those plants didn't exist. They didn't have grasses yet. They didn't have any sort of flowering plants yet, which means there was no pollinators around. So, like, the ecosystems are completely different from what we see today. And they were dominated mostly by coniferous plants. And one of the... I found a whole bunch of weird Triassic coniferous plants. I found a vine that was, needle. It had needles on it. It was a conifer. And, And then I found herbaceous conifers where... Like there's no woodiness, there's no woody stem. It's not a it's not like a pine tree. It's like, I don't know. It's what's an herb? Thyme. I don't know. Something herbaceous. It's just leafy and it's coniferous. It's like there's just a whole bunch of weird plants that existed at this time.
But, a bunch of weird everything existed at this time.
Yeah, like, everything was weird, like, from our perspective at least, because most of the things that we are familiar with today just didn't even exist yet.
Which or it was just getting started.
Yeah, like, or it was just getting started. Like,
yeah, evolution was playing games. Let's try this shit. Let's try this.
Oh, yeah, it, like, killed everything off for, like, hard reset, and it was like, let's try again.
Went into creative mode.
Yeah, it went into creative mode. God mode.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, yeah, I think Spencer's going to talk about this, but, like, some of the things that we know about, like, dinosaurs, were just getting started. And, yeah, Spencer, I'll...
Yeah, I think that's a good segue into mine. So I'll talk about the late Triassic, the beginning of the end for many things, but the beginning of so much for many others, including what you just said, the dinosaurs. So like what Sean was, well, kind of what both of you have been talking about, life was not dominated. When we think about pretty much anything before 65 million years, most people are just like, yeah, the dinosaurs. But up until this point, so the late Triassic kind of starts around 237 million years. It happens to coincide with the end of the middle Triassic. How weird. And so it itself is broken up into three different sections, the Carnian, the Norian, and then the Raetian ages in that order. And so starting in the Carnian age, this is when things kind of started to change. And I'll talk about a little bit about why it's changing. And I think Zach, it again transitions from what was happening in the mid Triassic. So yeah, I'll talk about that first. As Pangaea was splitting, when all of the tectonic plates pretty much that formed this giant supercontinent were splitting, it formed this big rift right down the middle. And you talked about that, and it formed that big long sea. Well, what that creates is when plates are moving away from each other, that means magma is able to rise up. And when magma rises up, that means you get an increase in volcanic activity. And an increase in volcanic activity means that you get an increase in, like what you said, Sean, when we were talking about the Permian extinction, an increase of carbon dioxide and sulfides into the atmosphere. Some of this might actually even start in the ocean, which has devastating effects. The climate was changing, and it was changing fairly rapidly. We've seen this before. right now, which is a little scary. So as the climate started to change, the things that came before the dinosaurs, these armored reptiles that lived both and dominated both on land and the water, they were starting to, they're these kind of big giant creatures because they're kind of the top of everything, right? And we've seen extinction in every extinction event, the big things are generally the things that are gonna go, right? Or like what you were saying, Sean, the sessile things, the things that don't move around are the things that are gonna go. But like a lot of groups, when certain groups of animals like the dinosaurs or say the mammals, when they first evolved, they're usually kind of small and inconspicuous. You don't just all of a sudden get a T-Rex, right? You have to work your way up to that. So during the Carnian, the first part of this late Triassic, this is when we see the earliest true dinosaurs coming out from the cracks and crevices almost. And they came out into a world that, yes, was dominated by, you know, these large armored reptiles, the ancestors of crocodiles and other things like that. And so they adapted to be able to outrun them or exist in areas where they didn't exist or have behaviors that they didn't have, like living in groups or, you know, if they were predators, hunting in packs and stuff like that. And so you saw this kind of quick boom of small dinosaurs coming about. Well, as the climate was starting to change and carbon dioxide was being released, it heated things up. So in the ocean, you had mass die-offs of lots of animals, specifically things that, one, like I said, couldn't move around. So sponges, reef-building things, phytoplanktons and stuff like that. But then also some of the stuff that kind of were higher on the food chain, like these larger reptiles, they were starting to suffer. And that opened up ecological niches that other things can kind of slip into. And so fish started to proliferate in the Norian Age, in the middle of the late Triassic, and which is kind of cool to think about. And then you continue in, and all of a sudden, as the volcanic activity increases, and again, it's getting hotter, it's getting drier. So yeah, you might have rain, but like Zach said, it's when you get rain, you might get a lot of it. And so it's monsoonal, and it's not super useful for plants and animals to use because it's not reliable anymore. Things have to move. And like you said, Sean, the poles were not these like arid, cold, dry wastelands that we think of them today. They were much more temperate. So the dinosaurs... There is obviously cooler. So the dinosaurs, it's thought that the reason that they were able to survive this extinction event that was brought about by all this volcanic activity is because they just moved to the poles, and they had innate abilities like feathers or protofeathers that helped them to adapt if the temperatures got colder, whereas something like a reptile can't do. They're reliant upon, or much more reliant upon, the external temperatures. And so they couldn't make it to these poles and, you know, these areas where the climate was a little bit more stable around. And so as you continue through the late Triassic, the carbon dioxide is building up. It's killing things off in the oceans because the giant, if, you know, giant blooms of plankton would take out all the oxygen and release more carbon dioxide, and then they would die. And then they, you know, that bio material would float down, and then the things down in the bottom, the organisms down in the bottom that would decompose them. Well, now they got this huge influx of food, but they're using oxygen. So all of a sudden they use up too much oxygen. And so now the ocean is basically, especially around the equator, is just non-existent of life. This extinction event was not as strong as the Permian extinction, but it still thought like a little over half of all the species on Earth went extinct, which again isn't as much as like 80%, but it's still a huge hit. And even again, it's not symmetrical, right? The animals that could escape this changing climate were able to move around and get somewhere where it was a little bit more stable. And that included the dinosaurs. So that's why the dinosaurs were able to kind of adapt around these other armored reptiles. But there's another little group of animals that were also doing some pretty cool things. So if you weren't able to migrate, say, north, you might be able to migrate underground and live in burrows. And this is how the earliest proto-mammals, the things that would evolve into mammals, these reptilian these mammal-like reptilians, they burrowed underground.
Dwarves?
And what's that?
Dwarves?
Dwarves. Yes. Essentially. Yeah, yeah. So they were also able to escape this. But things like the true crocodilians that might be able to be a little bit more adaptive living on land and water were able to kind of escape some of this as well. So not everything was taken out, but we did see major extinction events within specifically things like the ichthyosaurs. These are marine-like dinosaurs. Or, oh my God.
Oh my God. Get out of here.
I was going to say like dolphins. And then I was like, I said something wrong already. They were marine reptiles that looked like dolphins. That's what I meant to say. You have mass extinction events. The climate is changing, and the rise of the dinosaurs would start to happen. And that transitions out of the Triassic basically into the Jurassic, which is one of the coolest periods of time on Earth. I don't think any of us are biased against that. So
I don't know. It had a pretty cool park.
It did. Yeah, I went to it. It was kind of cool. So, that's the Triassic. I don't know.
I think the Triassic is like underrated. And I don't think I like fully understood it until we got into this, but I was like, man, there's some cool stuff happening in the Triassic. And
what's your favorite?
A lot. like one thing about the Triassic. My favorite thing.
Your favorite thing that's happening.
The dinosaurs are becoming a thing. Is obviously.
Oh, okay. It's, not the mammals, the group that you're a part of.
Fuck those.
So you think that the best thing about the Triassic is the thing that led into the Jurassic?
What do you mean?
Just like the rise of the dinosaurs. Like the best thing about the best thing about this time period is the fact that it would give rise to the coolest things in the Jurassic.
So are we saying there's no dinosaurs in the Triassic?
No. Though there are dinosaurs. The earliest dinosaurs existed in the late Triassic.
Are they like officially dinosaurs, or are they like really proto dinosaurs? Yes,
they're officially dinosaurs. Yeah, okay. There are a lot of, and we'll talk about these in the next episode. Or at least I will. Yes, true dinosaurs evolved in the Triassic.
So yeah, my favorite thing is that dinosaurs evolved during this time.
No, I know. I was just giving you credit.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they aren't reigning supreme yet, but the fact that this is when they started.
Yeah.
And they're still around today.
So, yeah, that's the Triassic period.
Nice.
Okay. I think we'll end it there, unless if you guys have anything to kind of add.
No.
Okay. Well, we'll end it with our signature how-how.
How-how. How-how.